Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, 2 minutes past the hour on this, the third day of December, 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to join in the real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Excuse me. Goodness gracious. That's some of that Obamacare chili, I fear. Multimedia real-time extravaganza that is Horn Chat. Just go to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you'll be in there. Hey, good evening, King of Cups. I don't think I've seen you in there before. Good evening to Texas Tea and Jug of Punch, and also to longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who has chosen to not fold space this evening, though he is a third stage guild navigator. So, thank you very kindly. King of Cups says, hey, from California, loved your work filling in for the Malloys, Bob. Much obliged. I really appreciate the kind words. I do. Very much so. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And Carol Baker says, there's Obamacare chili and I didn't get any? That black bastard's holding out on me. No, remember, yeah, this is the chili from down at the local restaurant where they're not going to be able to make anymore in 2016 because of Obamacare. Don't ask. That was a story I told while I was filling in for the Malloys. That's right, that's what that was. But I've become enamored of it. It's pretty decent chili. But it goes away in 2016 because Obamacare says that they have to list all of their calories and their fats and their grams and their micrograms and everything right there on the menu board, and there's not enough room on the menu board, so some items are going to have to go away. The chili's not on the menu board right now. But they make it homemade, and instead, if they want to offer chili because of Obamacare, they're going to have to bring in that stuff in a plastic bag, and it tastes like crap. Welcome to my world. Yes. Yes, indeed. But headonradionetwork.com is where we live, and that's where you go to help us keep the program on the air. Let's get this part out of the way. We try to raise $200 every evening. Every evening, indeed. That's 10 at 20, 20 at 10. And we have had challenges on the table for the first 2 days of December, and that's been a big help. And so we'll try to keep going and try to raise $200 this evening in any increment which we can get. We're also in the process of trying to get to our 100th, and we're not there yet, but we're trying to get to our 100th subscriber over at headonradionetwork.com/contribute. When you go to the page there, there's a little box you can click that says make this a recurring monthly contribution. $10. If you do a $10 a month subscription, that works out to about less than 17 cents per program, which, as far as I can tell, is a pretty big damn bargain. Yes. So that's where we stand on that, and hopefully we'll raise the $200 and away we'll go. This is, of course, Thorn in the Side Thursday. If you prefer to participate via the U.S. Postal Service. The mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. And remember, checks and money orders should be made payable not to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid never sees it, but to The Horn. Okay? Okay, because that's Boss Man Wayne's job. He puts on his spider-proof gloves and reaches into the echo chamber that is often the horn mailbox, and retrieves if they're there, and sends them off to the bank. Right. Okay. So, last night was tough. There's no getting around it. Last night was difficult because one quickly runs out of things to say about Murder Incorporated, which is what this country has become. Mm-hmm. Thank you very kindly. Randy letting me know loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac. Much obliged. We can go back to the San Bernardino slaughter if need be. And maybe at some point we will. But, Lord God, it was late last night when I saw the release of the names of the shooters, the murderers, the killers. And I knew right then and there where the rest of this conversation would go. Mm-hmm. But here's how it breaks out for me. There's nothing particularly unique about when we've had more mass shootings in the United States than we have days in a year, it's hard to say that there's anything unique about it. What we have is another American-born killer, a religious fanatic with easy access to firearms. End of story. Well, not really. I mean, there's lots of funerals. There's going to be 14 funerals, maybe more. There will be horrendous medical bills that no one is going to pay for, except the people who had the misfortune of getting shot. There's that. And, of course, we can't have any insurance. We can't have mandatory insurance for people who want to carry guns around, because that would somehow violate the Holy Second Amendment, the Holy Sacred Second Amendment. So, screw them. You know, just screw the victims, right? I mean, that's what victims are for, screwing. So, right. If you've got any thoughts on it, you're welcome to share them. We have two phone lines for that, one of them being 304-574-8178, the other one being 304-663-4676. We call that the stress line, 304-663-4676. It spells HORN, H-O-R-N, 4676. Isn't that nifty? But for me, everything changed here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, with the news earlier today that a verdict had been reached in the trial of psychopath. I don't have any problem using that term in regard to Don Blankenship. If you've ever been within 20 feet of the guy, just close enough to really look at him, You know what you're dealing with. Psychopath. And the psychopath has been on trial in West Virginia since October. And we got a verdict today. The jurors, tried and true, 8 women, 4 men, let Don Blankenship walk on charges of securities fraud, making false statements about stock stuff. They did, however, manage to convict him on one count, one itsy-bitsy, teensy-weensy, tiny little miserable misdemeanor count of conspiracy to violate mine safety regulations. And that has my attention right now. Maybe not yours. what if something else has your attention, that's fine. Share it, and we'll consider it together as a community, which is what we are here, the Horn Family Commune Congregation. But in light of the fact that the conspiracy to violate those mine safety health regulations had a direct and proximate impact and on the incineration of 29 men and the destruction of as many or more families, insofar as the violation of those safety regulations led to those 29 men being so badly incinerated that the rescue teams walked right past some of them without being able to tell that they had once been human beings. Yeah, this is on my mind this evening. And what this little piss-in-a-barrel verdict means in the wider scope of things, that's on my mind, too. I've got a note here coming from Jim. Subject line, Blankenstein. Congress must think that human life endangerment is a misdemeanor, whereas financial elements of crime are a felony. There is no justice. And there isn't. And, of course, they went to great pains in this trial to remind everyone, the court did, that this had absolutely nothing to do. Nothing to do with those 29 incinerated miners. And it was 2 weeks ago or so, and it was before Thanksgiving, that having gotten the case, the jury sent a note back to the judge, Judge Irene Berger, and said, "We're deadlocked. We're not getting anywhere." They were doing, that jury was doing everything it possibly could to let the millionaire walk. Because in the United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever indivisible under God, that's what millionaire industrialists do after they kill people. They walk. Now, let's be clear. Don Blankenship, when he is sentenced in March, and until which time he will remain as free as a little coal dust covered coal mine canary. No, he'll remain freer. That canary's poisoned. When he's sentenced in March, hold on to your hats. Don Blankenswine will face up to a whole year at Club Fed. No, I mean, come on. You didn't think he was, I mean, even if he gets sentenced, you didn't think he was going to face hard time out at Leavenworth making little rocks out of big rocks or anything, did you? He's a member of the ownership class, damn it. We're not going to make him do hard time. We're going to give him a rake and let him rake the leaves at Maxwell goddamned Air Force Base in Alabama, maybe. Or maybe he'll have to pick up trash at the Ashland Federal Penitentiary where Arch Moore, the creepiest, crankiest, crookedest governor ever to occupy the office in the state of West Virginia, did his time when it turned out that he was a bag man for the coal industry. Note coming in from Gerald. Gerald says, "When thinking about the victims, I'm forced to think of the movie Unforgiven." Gene Hackman says, "You, sir, are a coward. You just killed an unarmed man." Then Clint Eastwood says, he should have armed himself if he's going to decorate his saloon with my dead friend." Those victims should have armed themselves for going into public, going out in public.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, let's be clear, nothing is going to happen to Don Blankenship. Now, we had another mass killing in San Bernardino yesterday, where 14 people who didn't have it coming, 14 people who didn't deserve it, had their time on this little pale blue-green dot of a time machine hurtling through the universe, ended preemptively. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you'll notice, with the exception of a sitting state senator from the state of South Carolina who was murdered because of the color of his skin, we seldom see stories in the news of people who arguably have it coming getting what they deserve. I'm not advocating for anything. I am anti-violence. I am anti-gun. I am non-violent. But it is hard not to notice that people like Don Blankenship and Bob Murray, with the blood of the Crandall Canyon miners on his hands, they all walk away. And instead, it's some innocent soul holding a Christmas cookie up to their mouths who gets blasted into eternity. Carol asks, wouldn't giving some sort of cash payout for the death of their loved ones just continue this vicious cycle of dependence? Don Blankenship's sentence is a gift to Merca. Snark off. I know. And, of course, he's already announced, Blankenswine and his team of pettifogging lawyers, that they will, by God, appeal this miscarriage of justice on this poor put-upon millionaire to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond. Mm-hmm. So even after he is sentenced, let's remember, even if Irene Berger really throws the pamphlet at him, really throws the tract at him because it goddamn sure can't qualify as a book, and gives him the whole year, and no good time for you, mister. Well, it's not like he's going to have to give up his belt and shoelaces and bring his toothbrush to the courthouse, because he, by God, is Don Blankenship, member of the millionaire class in Merca. And we won't ask him to do any jail time until he's exhausted all of his appeals. And remember, if he happens to lose by some miracle at the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals level, then he still has an appeal to the Supreme Court of the United States, which, of course, is staffed by the rats. Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, and that Kennedy kid. A little reminder coming in from Ron in the recently frozen north up in Canada, where they don't have so many mass shootings. He says, "Now, Bob, he only used two, Ron. Are you paying attention? That was just two, so he hasn't violated it, no. Bob, good news. To the best of my knowledge, there hasn't been a single mass murder yet today in Merca." Well, there is that. Ron adds, "With respect to Don Blankenship, now that he's been found guilty of conspiring to violate mine safety rules, even if it's a misdemeanor, it would seem to open the door for large-dollar civil suits, especially for all those lawyers willing to work on contingency." Now, that's all done. That's all over with, for the most part. And the blood money was paid out years ago. There's nothing left but crying and weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth now. Mm-hmm. Carol notes in regard to there hasn't been a mass killing in the United States today. Reality spoken out there in Hooterville. It's early yet. Golly Moses, I mean, it's only 3:21 on the Pacific Coast. Here in the Eastern time zone, there's a good, there's a rock solid 5 hours and 39 minutes left for a mass murder to take place in. 6 hours and 39 minutes in the Central time zone, which is a big chunk of the country. 7 hours and 39 minutes in the Mountain time zone, where say, Colorado Springs and Planned Parenthood got shot up, and a whole 8 hours and 39 minutes, 38, in the Pacific time zone. Anything could happen. And Gerald notes, nope, Blankenship isn't going to get any time at all. He'll get a fine that he probably won't pay, and maybe some probation for a year or two. Yeah, Richmond, like in Virginia? You mean where Massey Energy's main office was located? Yeah, that Richmond, I know. But there are things worth considering, and this evening I did an interview with Ian Masters and his radio program. My interview with him will go up online at about 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. You'll be able to find it at ianmasters.com if you want to hear it, and you might. I know, Ron. Ron says, come on, I'm trying to be optimistic here. It's tough, that optimism business. It really, really is, Ron. And, well, it's just in the nature of the beast, I suppose. But there are things coming out of this. That deserve our consideration, our broader consideration. And Jim alluded to it in his email. It was one of the first things that dawned on me. What we have here is the fact that Don Blankenship was charged with some felonies in the form of misleading shareholders and misleading the stock market and misleading the Securities and Exchange Commission. Those, by God, were felonies that might have put him away for 30 years. On the other hand, conspiring, coming to an agreement with someone else in regards to an illegal act, and one or more of the conspirators taking a substantial step toward the accomplishment of the illegal act, well, that's just a misdemeanor. That's like jaywalking. That's like a parking ticket. See how it works. Mm-hmm. If you conspire, if you scheme, if you plan to violate rules whose only purpose in the world is to keep people from dying in filthy, gassy, dusty holes in the ground, mine complexes that run for miles and miles. If you scheme to do that, it's no worse than, say, getting busted in this state for less than 15 grams of pot. It's a misdemeanor. It's on the same level in this state with stealing $999.99. Granted, those are state standards, and we're talking about a federal law that was violated here. That's why he was tried in federal court. But in a way, we can take those two standards and compare them one to the other. Maybe it's a little bit apples, maybe it's a little bit oranges. And we can reach the conclusion, and damn me, you know how it is with ciphering. Let's see, I'm going to have to cheat and use the calculator here. Okay, so clear, and 999.99 divided by 29 equals, yep. So that means that each of the incinerated human beings, since it's a misdemeanor, each of the incinerated human beings was worth $34.48. Don't spend it all in one place. Mm-hmm. They're gonna be tough. I mean, they'll be, if he goes to prison, you know they're gonna be tough on Don Blankenship. If you go over to Huffington Post, you can read our good friend Jeff Bigger's take on this. He posted earlier in the day, just about as soon as the news broke. The title of the piece is Reckoning in Appalachia, Why Coal Mining Outlaw Don Blankenship's Conviction Matters. And it does. There is the shiny side of the coin in this. Almost never in this country are our industrialist millionaire betters ever charged in any way for their excessive conduct, their excessive criminal, monstrous conduct, which leads to torment and horror and the yawning, open, gaping hell mouth of a tormented future for countless God knows whose. I can't think of a mine boss in this state's history on a parallel with Blankenship who has ever even so much as been charged. And U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia, Booth Goodwin, is trumpeting, let this be a warning to all of you mine CEOs that flaunting our safety regulations comes with consequences. Oh, Muffy, darling, I can't imagine being in the federal stir for 365 long days eating nothing but that prison swill. I bet they won't even let me take my body servant with me. Mm-hmm. And boy, that's some warning, Booth. You get 'em, buddy. And of course, there are political consequences that go with all this as well. Because it had largely been bruited about this state that had he gotten his big win, Booth Goodwin was ready to throw his hat into the gubernatorial ring on the Democratic side and stand in stark opposition as a choice for people who didn't want to vote for billionaire, mountaintop removal, coal mining baron magnate Jim, ironically named Justice, or Republican millionaire owner of jets and yachts and mansions, also ironically named Bill Cole. Right? Right. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen now. He's not exactly the man who shot Liberty Valance, Booth Goodwin. He's the man who gave Liberty Valance a stern talking to for jaywalking. And Gerald also adds, don't forget that Blankenship was tried in federal court mostly because there wasn't a court in the state that would take up the case. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a law. It's not just the court. You know, you've got to have some laws to deal with. And we don't have any laws in this state for millionaire coal barons run amok. We just don't. What we have are Civitans and Lions and Rotarians and whatnot who would gladly welcome him into their warm and loving embrace to hear him talk about that Obama's war on coal. And to this day, understand that part of the strategy for Don Blankenship is to claim that he, Don Blankenship, is being persecuted for his conservative politics by that one in our White House, who is waging a war on coal that has reached all the way into the federal judiciary and has reached out to persecute poor, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Don Blankenship. Yeah, when I saw that number, that $36.48 or $34.68 or whatever it was that we did with the magic calculator a minute ago, I thought something similar, Carol Baker. Carol just said, shit, if you took the elements of the human body and sold them on the open market, it's worth $160. Donnie got a bargain. Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that's wholesale. Never pay retail. Not if you're Don Blankenship. And you know what? You might be able to... maybe intimidate the people who were dismembering the bodies and maybe get them for even cheaper. Mm-hmm. Work like you mean it. So at some point in time, Don Blankenship will go back to his residence in Las Vegas, and he'll be invited to dinner. And Republicans will court him for donations. And he'll be well thought of, and he'll be on Christmas cards card list. Dear Don, thank you so much for supporting freedom in Merca. Love the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. It's December, you know. The third day in particular. Maybe a little moment of... A moment of remembrance is in order. Maybe we should remember something that is known by near no one anymore. Let's see, third... This would happen. The anniversary would happen on the weekend. So, and alongside the Don Blankenship story, let's remember this. It was 108 years ago this Sunday in a little coal camp called Mononga. Mononga. At the Fairmont Coal Company's number 6 and number 8 mines, when by official accounts there were 367 men in those two mines. It was a Friday. At 10:28 a.m., an explosion ripped through those two mine complexes that killed almost all 367 human beings. Instantly, they were flash fried, just like the men at Upper Big Branch. The ventilation systems were destroyed. Rail cars were tossed around like set pieces in a Godzilla movie. They never got around to really bothering to discover an official cause, but they think maybe an electrical spark set off the gas. Or maybe the open flames of the miners' lamps did the trick. Mm-hmm. 108 years ago, Monongah happened. And it was a similar gas explosion in Upper Big Branch just a few short years ago that did the same thing to 29 men. 100 years. And considerable technological advancement and workplace safety regulations. And it still didn't make any difference. The thing is, in the case of Monongah, there were more than the 367 official workers there. Because other people were killed. Well, who weren't necessarily on the books. Boys, little boys, were killed. This is our history.
This is our proud coal mining heritage of West Virginia. About all I know is mining coal.
You can still buy a t-shirt with that on it at some of our local Rippy Marts. And by the way, and this makes the Monongah disaster relevant as well to the current times, almost every one of the dead at Monongah were recent immigrants to the United States from Italy. Some historians say it's upwards of 500 who died at Monongah. And only one man, a Hungarian fellow by the name of John Tomko, was rescued. There were more than 250 widows and more than 1,000 orphaned, fatherless children. It took a while to get the company to even take any responsibility at all. And when, just remember this, because this is the essence. This is the very core of capitalism. When the mining company finally paid out a pittance to the widows and the orphans, one of the mining executives was heard to remark, "Well," remember this was December the 6th, 1907. One of the mining executives was heard to remark, "Well, this ought to make a pretty nice Christmas for them widders and orphans." This, then, is the economic wonderland to which Republicans, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, birchers, libertarians in particular, would gladly return us. Because you see, that coal mine was self-regulated by the coal company. Because, I mean, they wouldn't want a disaster on their hands because that's bad for the bottom line. But you know what? It took them almost no time at all. Almost no time at all to have another 500 desperate human beings just fairly itching to get in there and dig the coal and not even be paid in American money. King of Cups with a question in the chat room. Bob, any guess if this coal baron was named as a beneficiary to death insurance payouts? They may be worth 38 whatever alive, but how much are they worth dead? Millions? That was not the case. Those insurance policies would cost money. So no. But as it is, most of the cases, if not all of them, have been settled. The monies have been paid out. For years now, you can drive around southern West Virginia, and you'll see a big decal on the back of a pickup truck windshield. Or on the back windshield of a pickup truck. And it'll show the silhouette of a man crawling on his belly with a hard hat on and the outline of a lamp. And it will simply say, in memory of, and one of 29 men's names will appear there with the date of birth to the date of death. And you can always tell it's an upper Big Branch because the month will be April. Because upper Big Branch exploded on Easter weekend. And there was no resurrection. Mm-mm. None. So, here we are. 18 minutes before the hour. I am once again a little ray of sunshine. But it's hard to be all Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm in the face of, or in the receipt of, a slap in the face reminder that here in West Virginia, here in Appalachia, and yes, here in Merca, working people matter not a damn. Not a tinker's damn. 100 years, and the same thing that killed 500 in Monongah incinerate 29 in Upper Big Branch. And guess what? There were no criminal charges at Monongah. There were no criminal charges at Farmington. There were no criminal charges at Eccles. Every time the mine blew up and every time the working class incinerated or gasped dying for one last breath trapped in the bottom of some corporate capitalist hellhole, it was simply written off as an act of God. The Pittston Coal Company in 1973 walked into court and pled exactly that when one of their sludge dams failed and a roaring tide of millions of gallons of coal toxic waste filth roared down the Buffalo Creek holler and killed 125 human beings. And a lawyer not much different than this pettifogging prick Taylor that represented Don Blankenship walked into the courtroom and said, "Your Honor, my client, Pittston Coal, owes nothing, for this was an act of Almighty God." Mm-hmm. Because God is awfully handy, because he never shows up when you go to blame him. And he never sends a lightning bolt down on a Don Blankenship to pfft and leave nothing but a little greasy spot. And where once upon a time in this state, once, working people abused by the Don Blankenships of another era actually rose up and shot at the coal bosses. Didn't hit anybody. I mean, come on. Well, that'll happen no more either. No, no, no. Those were 12 West Virginians, 8 women, 4 men, who did everything within their power to let Don Blankenship walk away scot-free. And, it will probably be argued on appeal, only convicted him of the least charge they could get away with so that they could get the hell out of that jury room. because the judge kept telling them, keep deliberating, keep deliberating, keep deliberating, keep deliberating. And like I said, that will probably be a ground. You know, the judge should have just declared a mistrial the first time they told her they were deadlocked. And who knows but what some right wing Bush appointee will say, you know what, you're right. Here, Don Blankenship, you poor put upon angel, you angel with a little coal dust on you on the end of your little nose, go and sin no more. Yeah. Just another day in the sacrifice zone where the working people pay with their lives and the millionaires pay not at all. And you know what? The bankers and the Wall Street investment types and the issuers of bonds, they loved Don Blankenship because they made fortunes on the issuance of the bonds. Those investment bankers, they had no exposure on the bonds. They were just doing the issue. They got paid. They got the money up front. You know, there's an old joke that says when you go to law school, and I presume it probably applies to, you know, when you go to Harvard's MBA school too, they tell you three rules on the first day of law school. Rule one is get the money up front. Rule two is get the money up front. Anybody need any help on what rule three is? I didn't think so. And you know who needed to be in the dock with Don Blankenship? Every last godforsaken, filthy investment banker who has ever signed off on a bond issue for Massey Energy. Massey Energy's stock is worthless now. They're in bankruptcy. But once upon a time, it was trading $70, $80 a share, and man, those were some giddy days. They couldn't blow up mountains fast enough at Massey Energy. They couldn't poison communities fast enough at Massey Energy, and no coal company, and certainly no executive, has to this day ever paid a price for what was done and has been done and continues to be done to the human beings who simply have the misfortune of having lived on ground for 8, 9, 10 generations and had a mountaintop removal operation move next to them. Not a penny. Not a dime. Nothing. That's just life around here. And by around here, I don't mean West Virginia or Appalachia. I mean in America. You pay a fine. If you're a millionaire, you get busted, you pay a fine. And you move along because the fine has no real impact. The fine is meaningless. Hell, if you get busted for something and you pay the fine, you get to write the fine off on your taxes. Oh, that's funny. Mm-hmm. That's a real hoot. Massey Energy got busted one time and got to pay their fine back to the state of West Virginia in rocks, just like an episode of the Flintstones. Mm-hmm. It's twoot. Yeah. At one point in time, the folks at Massey were subjected to one of the largest fines ever to be. I mean, it went into the hundreds of millions, and it was negotiated down to single-digit millions. And they got to write it off on their taxes. And no one ever pays a price. There's no accountability. Oh, there's plenty of accountability for you, and there's plenty of accountability for me, I, us, we, absolutely. Don't you damned well break the law, because the law will put you under the goddamn jail. Unless you got a few million bucks. I mean, I saw a story earlier today, totally off topic. But a young woman was busted with a little over an ounce of coke. A couple of dozen hits, 72 hits of acid, something like that. Good bit of cannabis. Some ecstasy. And it was pretty clear that she had gone into the retail end of the business. And the internet agreed that she was just the cutest little old mugshot they had ever seen. She was just this darling little white girl. Just as pretty as a picture. Happened down in Texas. Uh-huh. Did I mention she's a white girl? Yeah. Her bond was set at $39,000. And her daddy is a special agent in the DEA. Ain't that just charming? Yeah. All we got in common is our misery, Joe Keenihan used to say. So the least we can do is share it. Joe Keenihan being a fictional character from John Sayles' 1980s film, Mate One. There was a real human being, though. Her name was Mary Harris Jones. She became known as the Miner's Angel. They called her Mother Jones. And a little bit more trenchantly, she said, "Pray for the dead, but fight like hell for the living." Mm-hmm. Fight like hell for the living. I try to do what I can. I try to make people aware of what's going on here. This is a monstrous miscarriage. You would call it a miscarriage of justice if you thought something like justice existed. But justice is one of those things that gets talked about by people in tweed jackets while listening to brown liquor clink around amongst the artisanal ice cubes in the highball glass in oak-paneled rooms. And you know, what by God did Socrates say about justice? We don't even bother talking about justice around here. Most people can talk about around here is survival. And again, around here ain't necessarily just West Virginia or Appalachia. Around here is Merca. Yep. So we'll take a break. Your phone calls are welcome, 304-658-4676. That's the stress line, or 304-574-8178. That's line one. Also, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact account. Bob Kincaid Horn. This is listener-supported conversation radio. We're trying to raise our usual $200 every evening. Thus far, we are at zero. Hopefully that will change. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
blues in the night, the droning of his blues, with a hootie owl and a whippoorwill, like a nightjar without wings. I'm looking around me, it's so sad, the ravenous American dream gone mad. With one guitar was all I had, and just one song to sing, and I would sing a song for mother, for the mother of us all. For are we all not brothers on this blue-green spinning ball? You know that mother loves you, lift your hands and your voices too. Let's sing a song for mother, it's the least that we can do. For oil's sake we drill these holes, her back is broken for it's cold. Cashure River's in for gold, with a crapshooter's laissez-faire. But what about our future sons and daughters, blood kin everyone? After mother's turned and gone, because nobody cares. Don't you turn your back on your mother, don't you look the other way. For everything that's broken, you know someone has to pay. You know that mother loves you, do what loving children do. Try and help save your mother before her days are through. Don't forget your family and your family that is yet to be. There's plenty here for everyone, but not enough for greed. There's nothing new beneath the sun, only something's gone away. For everything her children won, why make mother pay? So let's give a gift to mother, so she'll know we really are the loving sons and daughters that she always knew we were. You know that mother loves you, and now it's time to show the love you hold for your mother before her time to go. Before it's time to go. Before it's time to go.
It's Thursday, December 3, 2015.
There is this sort of unanimity of opinion that something has got to get done here.
Historic United Nations climate talks now underway in Paris.
Technology-driven advances are relentless. They're going to drive down costs, and they're basically going to make the cheapest thing to do the cleanest thing to do.
Governments and billionaires launch huge new investments in clean energy. Plus,
governments currently engaged in this round of climate talks will want to know that there is more than just an executive branch. in our system of government.
Republicans working hard to undermine progress in any way they can.
All of that undermining and progress straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
While the world is in turmoil and falling apart in so many different ways, especially with ISIS, our president is worried about global warming. What a ridiculous situation.
And no one knows ridiculous situations better than you, Mr. Trump. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it's quite remarkable. With so much going on in the news, it's easy to not even notice the fact that this historic climate change conference is now actually underway in Paris, as you have been waiting for and anticipating for so many months.
Oh, yeah. It's history being made in Paris right now at the Global Climate Talks. The nations of the world are now meeting in Paris for the 21st Conference of the Parties of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, or COP21 for short. The goal is to complete a comprehensive, international, binding agreement for all nations to cut the greenhouse gas emissions that cause dangerous global warming in order to keep the planet's temperature from rising more than 2 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial times.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I know. It's about 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit. Human activity has already raised temperatures by 1 degree Celsius. So, by the way, we are halfway there.
Just to clarify, halfway to the bad thing, not
yes.
Halfway to the good thing.
That's right. U.S. President Barack Obama opened the U.N. Climate Conference with an acknowledgement that developed countries like the U.S. bear responsibility to take action.
There is such a thing as being too late. And when it comes to climate change, that hour is almost upon us. I've come here personally as the leader of the world's largest economy and the second largest emitter to say that the United States of America not only recognizes our role in creating this problem, we embrace our responsibility to do something about it.
A successful global agreement includes transparent mechanisms for all countries to review their progress and ratchet up their targets as new technology becomes available. It includes measures to reduce deforestation and the biggest area of conflict, funding for developing nations so that they can prepare for climate change impacts and hopefully leapfrog over the pollution phase of development while still lifting their people out of poverty. And most importantly,
that it is an ambitious target that seeks a low-carbon global economy over the course of this century.
In other words, phasing out fossil fuels completely. One thing the Paris conference will not do is solve climate change. National pledges to reduce emissions so far are not enough to stay below the key threshold of 2 degrees Celsius. So this is only the beginning. The talks create the architecture, the framework for the decades-long transition to a low-carbon and eventually zero-carbon economy. This is the first time all nations have agreed to do so. President Obama concluded his participation in Paris with a hopeful message.
I'm optimistic. I think we're going to solve it. I think the issue is just going to be the pace and how much damage is done before we are able to fully apply the brakes.
And so far, several major new financing programs have already been launched. The White House announced two sweeping initiatives. The U.S. and 20 developed nations will increase investment in clean energy research and development. A separate initiative headed by Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates will mobilize $20 billion in private venture capital investment. And India announced a new global solar energy partnership with 121 developing countries. But here in the U.S., Congressional Republicans still trying to undermine President Obama in Paris.
No.
This week passing two new resolutions to overturn Obama's landmark new emission standards for power plants, even though the White House will veto the legislation. They said it's to send a message to the world community that the U.S. might not abide by any agreement.
And to send a message that they don't like this planet really at all. They have no interest in keeping it livable, apparently.
Yet the Republicans are out of step with Americans. A new New York Times CBS poll this week finds 2/3 of Americans want the U.S. to sign on to the U.N. agreement.
For much more on the stories we covered today, including COP21, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I think they went to... I think they went to press too early to get the Blankenship conviction in, but I'm sure Brad and Desi will do a lovely job with it, say, on the Thursday edition of the Green News Report. Hey, let's run over to the Skype line where Gerald is standing by. Hey, Gerald, what's happening?
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
You know, I'm...
Yeah, I know. You know, you mentioned the Buffalo Creek disaster. And I'd like, I have some stuff here that I kind of did a little research on the fly here, just to put that into perspective for people not native to the area, don't really know a lot about it. As you said, it was declared an act of God. It was Pittston's number 3 impoundment that failed.
Yes.
Like 4 days after it was declared satisfactory by a federal mine inspector.
But a couple of days after people living in the area had been... begging and pleading, saying, is something bad going to happen? Something bad going to happen.
Right, right. And, you know, it was 132 million gallons of black coal slurry that went down that hollow.
Toxic waste.
Yes. It contains all kind of bad stuff. Wiped out 16 towns, coal towns, you know, coal camps. Killed 125 people. Injured 1,121, and over 4,000 were left without homes. I mean, and yeah, like you said, it was just deemed an act of God. Just now, this is, remember, this is 1973. So in, let me see if I can find my notes here real quick. However, 600 survivors sued for $64 million and settled in 74 for 13.5. Now, that, remember, that's 1973 dollars, so it would be a lot more today.
Yeah,
and it worked out to about $13,000 for each individual. There were, let me see, the state also sued after a commission was formed by guess who? You just mentioned.
Would that be the Arch Moore, yes, who, when he died, had to be augured into the dirt because he was too crooked to bury?
Exactly. The state sued for $100 million, and Moore settled for $1 million. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's Shelley Moore Capito, Senator, U.S. Senator Shelley Moore Capito's father.
Yeah, that's daddy.
For those of you playing at home.
Yeah, I remember when Arch appealed for his law license to be returned to him. And yeah, he said to the state bar, "I want to die a lawyer." And my first thought was, "And I want you to too. The quicker, the better."
Exactly. There were 348 child survivors. They sued for $225 million, and settled for $4.8 million in 1974. The reason I mention this, it just goes to prove what. To reinforce what you were saying, coal operators never, ever pay the price. It's always the victims.
Right, because remember, part of the reason these settlements worked out the way they did, and there's a really, really informative book called The Buffalo Creek Disaster about what went on around all of this. Looming over all of these judicial proceedings was the implicit threat of, well, sure, take us to trial. Get a verdict for $1 billion. You know what we're going to do after that? We're going to declare bankruptcy, and we're going to tell all of you stupid hillbillies to go and pound sand, because the law is on our side. The law works for us. It does
That's
not
exactly
work
right.
for you.
Also, in my research, I found a list of mine disasters, and it goes back to January 21st of 1886, and it's pretty interesting. Almost all, and I mean almost all of the nature of the accidents were explosion.
Yeah.
There were some powder explosions. For those that don't know, back before the turn of the century, they used black powder to blast the face of the mine. I mean, and imagine this. Here's one mine fire that happened here in Charleston, killed 13. You know, of all the ways to die, I can imagine that burning to death is probably one of the worst.
Without a doubt, and just because it's kind of personal to me, my father survived. The larger story is that in its infinite genius for putting people in the right places, and James Hornfisher talks about this in his book Neptune's Inferno, but the Navy would in the middle of World War II would bring in people and look at their backgrounds and try to figure out what they could do best on a ship. Because land-based warfare is different. You hand the people a rifle and you start teaching them how to shoot it. That's where you start with everything. But it's somewhat of a different story on a ship, where there are all kinds of different jobs that don't necessarily relate directly to firing a shipboard weapon at someone. And so they looked at a little hillbilly boy who had already been an underground coal miner by the tender age of 18, and they said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to stick him in the belly of an aircraft carrier 40 feet below the waterline, where he doesn't have a damn chance in the world if anything bad happens, but he's already been in a coal mine, so what? He'll probably be able to take it better than some corn-fed kid who's worked out under the sunlight all his life. And so my father did that in the Second World War. He gets home in August of 1945. They didn't waste any time. And goes to work back in the coal mines. And he told me he was there just long enough for one really good slate fall, in which he helped pick. He said, I experienced an adrenaline rush and superhuman strength, and was able to lift the rock off my buddy. Because, you know, that's what you call people down in the mine, buddy.
Right.
People he didn't know would refer to him as buddy, and my dad would look at him and go, I never mind no coal with you. And he came up out of there that day, and he said, I started looking for work. He said I was determined that I was not going to survive the Second World War only to come back and die in some godforsaken hellhole of a coal mine. And that's what led him down to alloy and furnaces, but that's I only mention that, Gerald, because that's all very much a part of reality. Is that you know, death stalked these coal camps, and they all had alarms or sirens that they would crank when the thing blew up, and they blew up with real regularity.
Yeah. I mean,
and one of the causes of the blow up is dust.
Right.
And you know, this is something that maybe folks outside of Appalachia can relate to. People out in the Midwest, you know, Iowa, Kansas, whatever, grain elevators, silos, dust from wheat, dust from corn, those suckers will blow right up too, because that stuff's combustible.
It's the same principle. I mean, you get enough of it in the air at high enough concentration and
boom.
Yeah. Same thing.
But the thing is, these are almost always, like you say, explosion, 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 explosion. And it's 100 years of that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, and I can look at this list here, and it's just, you know, and it's, I'll go back to 1940, you know, there's 1949, killed in an explosion. Six killed in another explosion in 1941. That was December of 1940, January of 1941. Six more killed. May of 1942, 56 of them killed. May 18th of 1942, five killed in an explosion. And this is all over the state. You know, this is just a list of West Virginia. This happened very regularly. And that's not counting just – because this list only counts a disaster as five or more.
Right, and that's the official designation. It's only a disaster if five hillbillies get killed. It's not a disaster if four get killed.
Right. And, you know, the latest Performance Coal Company, UBB, you know, Mont Coal Eagle, 29, and there was an explosion. The Sego was the last one.
You 13.
Know, most people don't remember that. You know, it's not, but one of the points I wanted to make is you go down this list and you see all these names of these coal companies that are no longer around. That was another thing I was trying to reinforce is what you said is, you know, go ahead and sue us. Doesn't matter. We'll never pay it because all of these coal companies that are listed on this list are gone. There's none of them are left. Not one that I recognize, even here recently, on the last part of the list, I don't recognize any of them. They may still be in business, but I don't think so, because that's probably not the practice.
They're designed to stay perpetually broke.
Right.
It's a function of corporate structure, and I don't know if she's listening right now, but this could be one of those places where the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas stand could be helpful. These shell corporations exist under the mothership corporation, and the reason they're done that way is to make sure that nobody ever can legally reach the upper levels of corporate structure. Don Blankenship sat where he sat and micromanaged all these little tiny shell companies, which never showed anything on the books, and were filtering all their money upstairs, precisely so he could not be touched no matter how many nefarious things he did.
Correct. I mean, he was untouchable by design.
Yes. And not by Don, but let's understand, Gerald, not by Don Blankenship's design.
Oh, no.
But by the design of Congress, who created these laws and created these structures in such a way as to make sure that they never do get touched. Because they are our betters. They are not to be troubled by the unpleasantness of legal process.
Well, that was another point that I was kind of going to make with this list, something you mentioned. How many of all of these disasters listed here, and I mean there was like 118 or something like that I counted here. How many convictions of anyone in charge were there? And I want to go out on a limb here and say there were none. I don't know. I didn't research it, but almost, you know, it's almost a foregone conclusion that no one went to jail over any of these deaths. Well, Upper Big Branch excluded. You know, it's always someone, you know, the mine foreman or the fire boss or whoever. You know, there's somebody's going to take the fall. It's certainly not going to be Don Blankenship. And we knew that going into this trial, didn't we?
Well, we kind of did.
I mean, I never expected him. I'm kind of surprised that he was convicted of what he was convicted of, you know, the conspiracy. That really surprises me. I figured he'd walk. He has that much influence in this state, in this area.
Well, and again, as noted, those eight women and four men did their dead level best to probably... did their dead level best to try to give him a pass, and only when they figured out that Irene Berger wasn't going to let him go home unless they at least slapped him on the wrist, did they finally go, okay, can we get 12 votes for this stupid misdemeanor?
Well, you know, the other side of that is maybe he got slapped with this just so there wouldn't be a mistrial declared, and you know, another jury pulled for it, you know, where they actually might get burned on it. You know, there's always that possibility.
I don't know. I think you could have tried him 100 times for those felonies and gotten 100 acquittals.
I think
because of the language involved.
Well, maybe so. I'm not much up on all that, but
because they, I mean, it was obvious early on the jury got hung up on the language because he was charged with lying to the SEC and the language was out of statements that were made corporately. And they were, and it was just, it was 19 feet of weasel words.
Right. Yeah. But the bigger picture, it, you know, that was the point I was trying to make, that a lot of people not around the area, and none of these fuckers ever, you know, no one is ever held accountable for all these deaths. I mean, it just doesn't happen because, you know, they're job creators and all of that.
And as I've said for years, the coal industry in West Virginia has risen well past being business or economics and has entered the realm of religious orthodoxy. You know, the thing with orthodoxy is that it's orthodoxy because there's just some stuff you can't challenge. They ain't going to change. No way, because this is how it is.
Exactly. that if you go down here in January, when the legislature is in session, and you'll be hard-pressed to find anyone to say anything bad about coal mining. Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. I mean, party, it knows no party lines. Not in this state.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, that's one of the reasons that I respect Jeff Kessler is he'll say, you know, okay, maybe coal was great, but it's over now. And
exactly.
we've got to talk about the future. Dr. Bill this week went to a Rotary meeting on Tuesday where one of those economic statisticians who is so good at just tearing things down to an almost submolecular level economically painted a picture for the Rotarians of Beckley that ain't pretty. And in the course of conversation, Dr. Bill and I were talking. I said, look, count it backwards here. We're talking about Earl Ray Tomblin, Joe Manchin, Bob Wise, Cecil Underwood, Gaston Caperton.
I know.
Gaston Caperton, Arch Moore, Jay Rockefeller, and Arch Moore, and that right there is 45 years. And starting in the 1970s, the economist kept saying, hey, folks, coal's going to be done in about 30 years. Might want to think about doing something else. And not one of those governors, Democrat or Republican, either way, has tried to do anything to mitigate the chaos and the crisis that is going to afflict this state and afflict this region. And the best they've got is to try to keep the rubes dumbed up by saying, you know, it's that Negro, and he's got him a war on coal.
They have done an excellent job, no matter how I try to explain it to anyone. You know, you and I see the big picture. Coal, it's dying. It's not going to come back. All these people around here, especially when you go south, like in your area and further south, they think as soon as that one in the White House is gone,
there's going to be the biggest discovery of coal in the history of Earth.
That's right.
And it's going to be right in West Virginia where they was where that one in our White House was trying to hide it from us with his war on coal.
And I tell them, folks, it ain't going to happen. It's not coming back.
No, it's not.
Ever.
Let's be clear about something, though, Gerald. Coal is going away in Appalachia. It is not going away globally.
Well, no, but
usage is going to continue to ramp up through the 2030s and 2040s, by which time it may be too late to save the human race. Not the planet, but the human race.
Well, the people, you know as well as I do, the people around here can't see that far. You know, they can only see right here, right in front of them. Got to have these jobs. And I wanted to go back. You know, you've talked about, you know, back in the 70s, the economists were saying, you know, it ain't going to last. The Democratic Party has had control of this state for 80 years up until the last election. So it, you know, they are just as implicit in this as anyone else.
Right, and the Democratic Party in this state, Gerald, fought a rearguard action against the reactionary right wing, because remember, it wasn't just any Democratic Party that controlled this state for 80 years. It was the conservative Democratic Party. Okay,
the Dixiecrats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, was it Richard Nixon who offered Robert Byrd a seat on the Supreme Court of the United States? I think it was Nixon. Because yeah. I don't think Carter would have done that.
Probably not.
But the larger issue is, I'm not trying to make excuses for the Democratic Party, because I'm the one who's been saying for years that we've got Colocrats and Colicans in West Virginia. And that they're engaged in a steel cage death match to see who can best fillet the coal industry. And who do the populace along the way? But God Almighty, Gerald, the bottom has fallen out. It's gone. Okay, I mean, the feces are about to strike the fan blades if they haven't already. And people in this state are still waiting for a carboniferous savior to rise from the bowels of the earth like some goddamn benevolent Balrog.
That's the impression I get, that there's just going to be some kind of this rising up of coal just as soon as this administration is gone, and that overreaching EPA. Can you even explain it to anyone?
Okay, so you tell me, Gerald, does it have to, how long does it take?
That's my question. You know, how long does it take? We're already at, you know, 51% in this state don't work, don't have jobs.
We're in the soup, okay? We're in the pot. It's beginning to simmer. And the thing is, here's the way I got my frayed purple velvet robe out with the moon and stars and the Will Thee Kiss Me and the Dark Baby and glow in the dark paint on it, and my crack magic eight ball that always says answer hazy ask again later. But here's how I see it: if by some miracle a Democrat manages to be elected president, then we're just going to get more war on coal.
Yep.
If a Republican is, and this is a very cynical view, and I freely confess it, if a Republican is elected, then what they'll say is, well, I reckon the coal's gone, but at least we've still got our Jesus. Praise Jesus, he'll get us through it. We'll figure it out somehow. Or we'll eat squirrel brains and possum or groundhog or something. But damn, if only that Negro hadn't killed us.
Right. Right.
Tell me I'm wrong.
No, I'm not
soliciting prey. I'm not fishing here. I want to be wrong. I want to. Bob, you couldn't be more wrong. You're a damn moron about this. Come on, straighten up, Bob.
Well, I wish I could say that with a straight face, but unfortunately, I think you're right.
And the other thing is here with this misdemeanor conviction, no matter how hard he's trying to spin it positively, I think we can put paid to Booth Goodwin running for governor.
I think, yeah, he's done. I don't think he really had a chance to begin with. If he'd have tried a little harder, a little sooner, but I don't know what we'll end up with next November. Is more than likely going to come down to Bill Cole or Jim Justice, you know.
And you know what?
I will. Coal company's hip pocket. One owns the coal company. The other one's in his hip pockets.
And I don't. You know, I don't have to. I'm not beholden here to anybody but the people like you who help keep us on the air and many others. So I can be candid and I can say what's on my mind. And if it comes down to Bill Cole versus Jim Justice, I have one group in particular that I hold personally responsible for this, or at least the Jim Justice part of it.
The UMW?
Well, organized labor in this state.
Well,
because they have never had a better friend than Jeff Kessler.
Well, right now, as it is right now, I know, you know, with my involvement, Kessler is who the trades are backing. Of course, you know, they generally don't announce any endorsement until after the primary. So, and the other things I hear are some of the polls that have been done. If it shows if it's a Kessler-Cole race in November of 2016, Cole wins. If it's a Justice-Cole race, Justice wins by so many points. But, you know, you're getting into those polls again that really don't – it's too early out for that kind of stuff. But at least that's the information I have. I really don't know. It's and in the presidential race, who the hell knows what happens there? I mean, right now it's looking like it's going to be Trump and Hillary, if Trump doesn't burn himself out before then. Which, you know, hey, I hope he wins. I hope he wins the nomination. It just makes it that much easier for our side to win in November. Because he will have surely burned himself out by November.
You know, I don't know. I'm
well, here's the thing.
What happens? What happens? I mean, there are scenarios within scenarios, circles within circles here. What happens if he decides to run an independent campaign versus, say, as much as I'm loath to consider it, versus, say, Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton and Jebbia? I don't think that necessarily makes a Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton victory necessarily a foregone conclusion. And you know, just because it's you, and just because we haven't talked in a while, 731, Hitler was elected with not a majority of the vote, I don't think, in Germany, but with a plurality.
Right.
And Ashley Banfield over at CNN pointed this out a couple of days ago. I'm surprised she still has a job, if she does. But I don't share your conviction that there's just no way Trump wins. Because this is a mean, pig-eyed, hateful, stomp your foot and spit in your face and slit your throat mean country. And we only thought we scraped the bottom of the barrel with dim leader. There's more to be scraped, and that is Donald Trump.
Yeah, but I'm afraid to say anything now because
I'm not gonna bark at you or anything.
No, you know, you just kind of made me think about just how dumbed down the electorate is. You know, half the shit he's talking about, he's going to do this and he's going to do that. You know, that's not how it works. The president just doesn't get elected and just do whatever the hell he wants to do. He needs the cooperation of Congress. I mean, he can issue executive orders and things like that, but I mean, the shit he's talking about, it don't work that way. And you would think that voting adults in this country would be able to understand that, but I guess not. I mean, because that's what I hear. He's just talking, speaking the truth, and blah blah blah. Yeah, like really. But remember, you know, these are the people that
couldn't
convict Don Blankenship, and
right,
you know.
Right. I mean, I've seen it. I'm sure you have, too. The number of people out there during the pendency of this trial saying, you know what, they're just trying to punish him for being wealthy and for being a job creator. They're just trying to punish him because he's not a liberal like at Obama.
Yeah, I love how they throw that word around, liberal.
Yeah.
Anything they don't like is a liberal.
Right. Well, we all know that Obama's such a liberal.
Yeah,
one of these days, I'd love to see him be that. But you know,
I have this. There's a guy at work that's Obama's liberal. I said he's not a liberal. I said, well, what is he then? Well, he sure as hell isn't a liberal.
He's a center. He's a center right Democrat.
He's like what, Nixon?
He went his first summer vacation. I remember a conversation with Sandra. His first summer vacation as president, when he went to Martha's Vineyard or where the hell ever, his summer beach reading was Ronald Reagan.
Saint Ronnie.
Hey, well, mommy, I am a vegetable.
Then I hear, well, these gutless Republicans have given him everything he wanted. What? When? Isn't it the other way around?
Sometimes
everything they want.
Yeah, sometimes I'm glad for the drug testing protocols there in the building trades, Gerald, because that means that when this happens, you can't just immediately start injecting the marijuanas, because I'd have to.
I don't know if the marijuanas would be strong enough. Well, to be honest with you, I try not to get I keep it real light on the jobs. I just try not to, because you would be surprised.
I wouldn't. I imagine about 90% of the time, if any of these topics come up, it ain't you bringing it up.
No,
because, see, the thing with right-wingers is they assume that because of your white skin, you share their white-wing hatred.
Right.
And so they bring it up, and then they look at you like you got 17 heads if you say, you know what, you're nuts.
That's why I try not to bring up politics and religion on the jobs, because I don't fit in. Not generally. I mean, there are some. I mean, it's not, you know.
That's another question, Gerald. What happened to the militant, activist, labor-based West Virginia workforce? Well, Don Blankenship helped put paid to that, too, by breaking the UMW.
And buying him a seat on the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals?
Well, there's that.
For the sake of the children, you know. And then they bought the Attorney General's office to put that carpetbagger in. Hell, they bought the Senate, the state Senate. We've got the best government money can buy.
Or worst. Depending on how you look at it.
You know, whether it comes from Koch Industries or Alec or Don Blankenship, does it really matter? I mean,
So really, what happens to us? I mean,
I don't know. That's my thing. You know, it used to be, okay, that was another thing I was going to bring up. You know, the coal mining jobs are going. They're leaving. And as a result of that, there are so many other industries in this area that are supportive, that support the coal mining. You've got, you know, Walker Machinery and all the equipment manufacturers, all the mine supply places. If you take all that out of the picture, at least back, let's say, 30 years ago, back then, well, there was always the chemical industry here in the valley. You know, Union Carbide, Dow, DuPont, there were a bunch of, Monsanto, all of those. And, you know, they employed thousands and thousands of people. And up in the northern part of the state, you had the steel industry. I mean, there were jobs. But, you know, all those are gone now. The chemical companies have shut down. They're just a skeleton of what they were, these chemical plants around here. The steel mills are, you know, all but idled. So, you know, where do we go? We haven't and this is what I was going back to earlier. I lay this right on the leadership in this state who
none of whom have ever been run out of town on a rail, and most of whom should have.
Were Democrats, and I blame them for being so short-sighted of the future of this state. They just kept banking on the extraction industry, and I use that word because, now they're all this.
Yeah, because fracking is going to be our salvation.
Right, but we don't get the severance taxes from that like we did coal. That's why the state budget's in the shitter. And extraction, not only energy, but, you know, timber was another big one. So where do we go? What happens now? Do we all just pack up and move to North Carolina? Because that's what Bill Cole wants to make our economy like. And I'm not throwing off on North Carolina, but, you know, there are jobs there, but are
not
they
not enough to support an entire state's migration? No, hell no. And here's the ugly part of it, the sad part of it. My family, I got kids who want to leave Appalachia, and I don't, as much as I'll miss them, as much as I love them, I don't say don't do it. I say I understand. On the other hand, we have another child, they're not children, they're grown now, who wants to stay here, who is in love with the natural beauty of this place, who has looked at me and said, Dad, if I leave, all I'm going to do is pine for all of this beauty. But you know what? Nothing. There is nothing there for the, and God knows the brain drain in this state is bad enough. Dr. Bill can document it chapter and verse. But there is no incentive whatsoever for anybody of talent or ability or intelligence to stay here.
No, there's not. The other side of that, you know, you go back to what do we do? I mean, we can't all work at Walmart and the Wiggling Pig because somebody, you know, that money has to come from somewhere, and minimum wage jobs don't pay enough to keep an economy going. Give a damn how many jobs you have.
Well, you've already heard me talk about how there's an aisle of ramen noodles in the Wiggling Pig now.
Well, yeah. Yeah. All different flavors.
I forget who posted it on Facebook, but I saw a photo the other day that said a truckload of ramen noodles crashed on the interstate the other day. Losses were estimated to be at $38.14.
Losses could be near in the hundreds. Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, these are the issues that I think that are the leadership of the state should be addressing. I don't think that it's
but they translate outside Appalachia, because this is we have been an ongoing economic experiment in this country, and anywhere that that an area puts all its eggs in one basket, there's going to be trouble someday, because the corporate powers that be, the corporate governance or whatever, is eventually going to say, well, you know what, we need to leave. I'm sorry, wrong accent here. I'm sorry, dear people. We've certainly enjoyed our time here, but it's time to lay all you poor bastards off and go away. Goodbye now. We're terribly, terribly wealthy off your backs, and we'll think of you once in a while. No, who am I kidding? The hell no, we won't. But goodbye now, and thanks for everything. Really, really, thanks for everything. And that's it. And yeah. And I don't care if it's a car plant in Alabama, Or sand mines in Wisconsin. It's the same principle, Gerald. And at some point, that there's only one industrial sector that I'm aware of that has the potential to grow almost infinitely over the next 100 years. Care to guess?
No, I don't want to guess.
Wind and solar.
That's what I was going to guess, but. I was afraid I'd be wrong, which brings me to my other argument.
Yes,
that's another one of their war on coal things. Now everyone's electricity bill is going to go up. They're closing all these power plants, and I might add outdated power plants who had already lived their life expectancy. And that's another argument I have with these. Well, your electric bills, you're going to pay to double your electric. No, you're not. No, you're not. Because there's no demand for that electricity, because we don't manufacture anything in this country anymore. That's who used all the electricity. The aluminum smelter in Ravenswood, you know, the steel mills, those were the people that used the mass amounts of electricity. All those are gone. We don't build anything here anymore. It's all made in China and shipped, put on a boat and shipped over here. That's why we don't need the electricity, because there's no demand for it. AEP, you know, Appalachian Power, has already said so. They don't need those plants. So, you know, yeah, your regulations, we had to shut down some power plants, some old plants. No big deal. We didn't need them anyway.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I got a note here from Ron in the recently frozen north. He says, here's my pessimistic prediction for West Virginia. The old people will continue to die. The young people will continue to move away. The tax base will dry up. There will be less funding for education. The northern part of the state will have the only viable economy, and Mississippi will be prosperous by comparison. It will become a place to drive through on our way to someplace else, which it already is.
You won't want to do that because the roads will be unpassable. They're already terrible because of the drying up tax base.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe the interstates, because that's federal highway money.
Well, yeah.
But what's interesting in what Ron observes there...
Replacing them damn signs unless they're faded enough.
Yeah. No, seriously. But here's the thing about what Ron said. All of that can be found, and I don't know if you've ever seen it, but I have. There was a memo circulated by a lawyer whose last name was Snyder. And he worked for what was then Columbia Gas. And he wrote a memo about the deliberate depopulation of West Virginia and Appalachia to make it safe for the extraction industries. And he said, most of the people will go elsewhere, the old people will stay here and die off, and we will maintain just about as much of a population as we need to afford minimal amounts of education and services to the people the extraction industries need to continue to extract West Virginia into a state of until it's used up, and then everybody else will leave too.
Just as George Carlin said, they don't want smart people. They want people just smart enough to run the machines to do the work, right?
Yeah.
The proletariat.
And there you are, and the next thing you know, you're watching the first Hunger Games movie, and you're going, well, goddamn, who knew that was a documentary?
Well, I keep going back to Idiocracy. That,
well, you know, why you don't got no tattoo?
He's got electrolytes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's
but by
that's,
God,
that's
we're,
what I feel like.
We're going to we're going
to these dolts.
Yeah, we're going to have our guns in case the government tries to put its jackbooted jackboots down on our freedom loving necks, right next to our Confederate flag tattoo on our neck.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what I feel like. That's what I feel like I'm talking to when I talk to a lot of the people around here about. Well, when you get into political things and things of that nature, it's like you're talking to the characters in that movie. It's got electrolytes. Coal has got...
Yeah, they're poisoning our water. Water.
Coal keeps the lights on.
They're poisoning our water. Water, like from the toilet.
Yeah. Coal keeps the lights on. You go sit in the dark?
Why do you keep saying that? Well, they pay me every time I say it. Coal keeps the lights on.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. Gerald, thank you.
I need to know what size shirt you want for Christmas.
By God, we're going to go round and round. Honest to Jesus, Gerald. No kidding. You buy me that all about all I know is mine and Cole t-shirt, and we are going to go mono, goddamn mono. I want you to understand that.
How about a Friends of Cole t-shirt?
You dirty bastard.
Or maybe I could find both.
Oh, yeah, you probably could if you looked hard
enough.
Bumper
stickers, you know, coal. I bet I could go up to the Walker machinery. They've got the one with coal with a little light bulb in it, and it, you know, says Walker machinery.
I don't want one unless you can get the one that says coal, clean, carbon neutral coal.
I haven't seen any of those for a while.
They still got their billboard over in Beckley.
Oh, they do? They used to have one here in Charleston.
Yeah, as you're looping up from Bird on Harper, headed back out to the turnpike, it's coal. Clean, carbon-neutral coal.
Yeah.
And what's really fun is when you translate that into Spanish, and it says carbon sin carbon. You know, I mean, carbon without carbon. Right, sure.
Right.
Fat-free lard.
It's got electrolytes.
Jesus.
So what, you need large?
Yeah, that'd be a 2X, yeah.
2X, okay.
Broad shoulders and all of that, right.
Yeah. Right, gotcha.
And I don't know. I see. I think the liquor store closes at 10 o'clock now. I might be able to make it if I just go bolting out of here and place my gas station pizza order on the way, hit the liquor store for the cheap rock gut tequila, and blow back through and grab the gas station pizza. Now, that's a holiday party. We're going to have to sit down and have some gas station pizza, Gerald.
Yeah. Yeah. I could meet you there at the Sunoco or the Wiggling Pig.
I'm a-telling you. Now, to be fair, the Wiggling Pig has some excellent chicken tenders.
Oh, really?
Yes, they do.
You know, it's hard to screw that up. I mean, they come in a bag, they're frozen, you stick them
in. No. These are big. I mean, maybe they do, but, I mean, these are big, meaty, juicy affairs with the... And they fry them, and yum, yum, yum. And they serve it up with my sweet honey mustard from Charlie Biggs's Chicken and Sauce, kicking it up. And that is some fine honey mustard.
Well, next time I'm up that way, I'm going to have to bring some wings from this place up the road here.
Cold Spot?
No.
Oh,
no, hell no. You throw rocks at the Cold Spot's wings after you had these.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. Which I was going to go to the Cold Spot today and have lunch, but I didn't make it down that far. No, it's a place called Rollin' Smoke here in Big Chimney. They do hand-pulled pork, and they've got some of the best. There's smoked wings.
Stop it.
Oh, I'm doing the tender.
Oh, I'm a wing freak.
Me too. I can eat my weight in those. They are really
well. We will have to get you up here, and you can try the wings at Pies and Pints, or the one down in Charleston too.
I've never been there.
Oh, their wings are so good. They marinate them in like buttermilk and sriracha. And then they grill them and then put cilantro to them, and they make their own in-house gorgonzola dressing. Whoa, stop it.
Stop it, Bob. That's food porn.
Well, that's the obligatory food porn section of the program. I mean, I gave you 731, okay? I mean, what do you want?
Yeah, and I that's what I'm going to use my winnings to buy some wings and bring them up there to you.
Sounds tasty. Sounds real tasty.
And your Christmas gift.
About all I know. I want the pink. Now, damn it, I want the pink one. If we're going to insult me, get me the pink one and let's do it upright.
Have you seen the one spoiled coal miner's wife on the back of the cars?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to find something like that for you to put on your car, but, you know.
You know, it'd get me curb stomped right into a mud hole. But I tell you what, a pink spoiled coal miner's wife T-shirt to wear around town. I tell you, that'd be something.
You could put that that coal keeps the lights on sticker right beside your Bernie sticker,
and just confuse everybody.
Get some valet parking wherever.
What the hell are you talking about, Kincaid?
who the hell's Bernie?
Hedging my bets.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, let me get off of here.
All right, Gerald, it's been a delight. It really, really has.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground tonight.
We have, indeed, and don't be such a stranger.
Well, you know, like for some new callers to call in.
Well, we've had a couple of calls in the interim, so maybe they'll want to.
If you're listening and you haven't ever called in before, it's quite easy to do.
And dare I say, it can even be fun.
Yes, I have had some fun here. Yes, you just call in, and it's just like we're sitting here across from each other.
Yep, got a quart jar of the local hooch, and just passing it around. We've already lit it to make sure it burns blue and not red and green like it's been through the inside of a Ford Pinto radiator or nothing.
Right, exactly. Yeah, even had some gas station pizza.
You know, they put extra cheese on mine just because they love me.
Do you even have to ask for it?
I don't. I just call now and I say it's me, and he says, I'll have it waiting. Don't even have to tell him.
You know, that's the bad thing about the little place down the road here, a little pizzeria. My wife calls. She says, I need a large with, they said, this for you. It mentions her by name. Said, yeah. And she doesn't even have to finish it.
Got it. Be right. Yeah. 15, 20 minutes. Be right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
16:24 or whatever it is. Did you want any wings with it this time? I quit getting wings down there. They're not very. I don't. Their wings just aren't very good.
Yeah, I know. But, well, believe me, it's a choice between Geno's and gas station pizza, and about half the time, gas station pizza wins.
Yeah. Hey, I'll tell you some place that does have decent wings for a chain is the Little Caesars.
Yeah?
The little eight-piece wings or whatever they have there.
Not terrible?
They're not bad. Not bad. I mean, I've had worse.
and that's the benchmark standard in Appalachia. I've had worse.
My standards are pretty low, you know.
I've had possum.
But yeah, they are pretty good. I mean, really, they'll do in a pinch. Better than nothing.
By God, I think that's actually chicken.
Well, anyway.
Have a good night, Gerald. Thank you so much for joining me. You know what? I was talking to Carol the other day. We might have to change the name of the program. Out on the Ledge with Bob Kincaid. What do you think?
Sounds good.
Yep.
Sounds
slide good. Right over, light up a smoke, and enjoy the view.
There you go. Well, hey, thanks for talking with me.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for placing the call. Gerald, hey, you take care.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you. Bye now. All right. From not too terribly far away from here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, that's our buddy Gerald. And let's run over to the stress line where we might have, is that you, Heather? Oh,
yes.
Hey, Heather.
Hi. I heard a little bit of your last conversation. You were making me hungry. But I also heard something about you were talking about fracking. Oh, it's awful. That's not good for the environment. Neither is nuclear, but the only reason I say that is because I live between two nuclear plants. I know three people who've had cancer, maybe more, and I just don't like what's happened to the environment. And yeah, I heard you talking about the water, and that's not cool either, but we won't even go there. But we screwed up our environment something terribly.
We have destroyed our living space.
Mm-hmm.
For money. I mean, just to follow up a little bit, since I'm being kind of West Virginia centric here, the Fayette County Commission. I live in Fayette County, West Virginia. The Fayette County Commission has received a petition. The petition has 5,000 signatures on it, and that's a lot of people in this county. And that petition asks the county commission to take action that they legally can take to stop the injection of toxic fracking waste into old abandoned coal mines in an area of Fayette County called Lock Gully. All right? And these are just facts. These are not allegations. These are not assertions. These are not argument points. These are facts, Heather. Highly radioactive waste from fracking is being dumped into the ground at just one injection well. In that one injection well, the equivalent of 3,606 railroad tanker carloads of oil and gas fracking waste has been pressure pumped into the ground. And it's being done with the connivance and the by your leave of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection. Now, there's no way that's good. There's no way that's even remotely safe. But it's business. And somebody's got a job from doing it. And that's our reality here. And frankly, it's the reality probably anywhere they're fracking, because they have to do something. It is radio damned active, and you have to put it somewhere. There's no getting around it. And it's terrifying. I still have you, Heather?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it does the same thing to me. It kind of makes me go, Really? Wow. And people will be, there will be birth defects, and there will be cancer clusters, and horrifying sadness. And people, well, why did that happen? Well, because 5,000 people got ignored by their county government. At that point, what do you do, Heather?
Being pissed is good, and it's a start.
Well, yeah.
I just can't believe. I'm not saying you're not right, because I know you are. But why on earth? Why on earth would they let that happen? Is it the money, the politics, or both?
I would say both.
Money, but it just
Well, somebody's got a job pumping that poison into the ground, and somebody's got a job driving them trucks of poison, and somebody's got a job pumping that poison out of the fracking. And see, if we don't have that, we won't have no economy. I know.
Hang on a second. Okay, I'm back.
All better now?
Hello?
Yep, I said all better now.
Okay, yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, good. But, you know, the government agency does this, and they do it in accordance with laws that are passed that tell the government agency how to operate. And then they act, and the government laws are passed by people who are paid by the extraction industry, by the millionaires and billionaires, to pass these laws, and the well-being of the people of this state or many others be damned. I mean, isn't that about how it works?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, I mean, and then you guys were talking about the water, and from what I gather in my own state, there, I think it was Flint, well, maybe it was Detroit, but there was some water that wasn't worth diddly squat, and they were having people drink it and everything, and people just got sick of it.
Oh, yeah, well, that was Flint. That was Flint.
To do something, and it took a while, but I guess I don't remember what they got done, but they're finally getting to the point where somebody's going to try to, something's going to happen for them, and their water might be safe again, but, yeah, I wouldn't know.
And then what about the underground fire that is in the St. Louis area that is creeping ever nearer and nearer and nearer a radioactive waste dump, which is sitting hard by a water supply? That's why, Heather, when people say, well, Bob, why don't you move? I keep saying, to where? To where? Iceland? New Zealand? If I get to go to New Zealand, I just wave bye-bye to the rest of poisoned America. So long, and thanks for all the fish. Wouldn't it be easier to stop doing this to ourselves? Can't we stop doing this to ourselves?
We should.
I mean, I remember the words of John Kennedy, who said, what was it, in his inaugural, those who... How did it go? Those who oppose peaceful protest make violent revolution inevitable. Something like that. Pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's one of those things that I think about all the time. Do the American people have a breaking point? You know, we spent the entire program last night talking about the slaughter in San Bernardino, and we asked ourselves, is there one time, is there one person, is there something that will happen that will make us finally stop this? And almost without fail, everyone seems to be coming to the same conclusion that, so far, no. And you know, how many communities have to be poisoned? How many children have to be born with horrible birth anomalies?
Too much.
And the answer keeps coming back. You know, that number is unknowable, because the American people are complacent. They're not so complacent in the rest of the world. But here, as long as the cable stays on, I guess we're okay with it. And we just expect that sooner or later, we're going to be sitting on the table in the doctor's office, and they're going to come in with that grim face on and say, well, you got cancer. There's no good way to put this. Well, why do I have cancer? Well, do you remember when all that poison got spilled in the Elk River back in, 2013, 2014? Remember that? It turns out when that happened 20 years ago, 300,000 people got cancer, and we know now statistically that 32% of them are going to get cancer out of it. They got poisoned, they're going to get cancer. So, you know, sorry, you just rolled snake eyes. And there it is, you know, Heather, there it is.
And you were also talking about back when, unfortunately, there used to be, I don't know, I guess you were talking about your downtown or whatever, but I've lived in Michigan my whole life. And there's actually, my parents live in Niles, and one afternoon, I went to Niles, and I was doing something with my dad. We went through downtown, and there was this song, I guess it's called The Little Man. From Alan Jackson, you may not like country, but he did.
Oh, I do.
And you do or you don't?
I do.
Okay, well, I love that song. And that's what that town used to be. Well, I kid you not, from like about 1990 to I don't know how many years later, that town just, I mean, they had a bookstore burned down, but my God, that was minor compared to the rest of the shit, excuse my French, the rest of the things that left. And it's we're invaded by huge businesses, let's just say, this country's been invaded by box stores, heaven forbid, and the environment's horrible. When is this all going to finally quit? And I know I sound like I'm going on a rant, but...
Well, that's quite all right.
I call it a rant because a friend of mine said that if you call it a rant, you shouldn't even say that, she said, because if you call it a rant, not... He said, it's moot to me, Missy. But it's just, I don't know. If it's not one thing, it's another. But I just, good God, people, when the hell are we going to decide that a lot of shit has to stop?
Well, you know, there's a saying out there that the price of freedom, that eternal vigilance is the price of freedom. And I think we make a mistake in thinking that if we have a national consciousness about this stuff, that, you know, somehow it's going to be taken, someday we'll win. But every one of these issues, whether it's the water in Flint or people being blown up in West Virginia or poisoned by fracking in Ohio or Pennsylvania, what have you, or mass murders. There's that other saying that says all politics is local. And I think we have to address the problems locally, and then we network and organize nationally. And I don't know if we're necessarily doing a good enough job. And the problem is that 9 times out of 10, these toxin issues affect poor people. And poor people almost never organize, Heather. And that's a fact. So maybe local organizing really is the key. Maybe that's where it all starts. But it's been a wonderful conversation. I'm glad you called. And I hope we will talk again soon, Heather.
All righty. Have a great night.
You take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Calling from Michigan, another little toxic wonderland here in Merca. That's Heather. So both lines are open. I think I saw Todd call in a minute ago. If you want to try again, and a couple of others, we've been terribly, terribly serious about so many things. Can we have a little giggle, just real quick, because it's funny? I have a clip here from Mumbling Ben Carson, who gave a speech, and it is described as a rather stiff speech. Don't worry, the clip's only 50 seconds long. We're not going to listen to the whole damn thing. We don't have enough antiemetics. But Mumbling Ben talked to the Republican Jewish Coalition, both of them. And, no, I presume there's probably a lot of Republican Jewish. Why? I don't know. But, yeah. And so, just real quick. So he's talking to the Republican Jewish Coalition, and he wants them to know that he really, really hates Hamas. That would be Hamas, okay? Because Hamas are bad, 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 awful people. Hamas is, are, something, whatever. So you got that? Good. Oh, hockey puck.
But beyond the territorial challenge, a much bigger challenge exists. The challenge is the split between Fatah and Hamas. Fatah and Hamas operate in a constant state of conflict. Fatah rules the West Bank, Hamas rules the Gaza Strip. These two groups are constantly arresting each other's political foes in their respective territories. They reportedly torture each other's cooperatives and are continually vying for the support of the Palestinian people. Part of the problem, of course, is that Fatah is largely a secular political movement, while Hamas is a deeply religious Islamic political movement.
And, of course, thanks to our buddies at Right Wing Watch, who I don't know how they put up with all of this to do it. But did you catch that? Mumbling Ben is not quite sure if he's talking about hummus or Hamas. One is a tasty dish made of crushed chickpeas and crushed sesame seeds and little lemon juice and maybe some garlic and is yummy with warm pita bread. And the other is a Palestinian and Mumbling Ben don't seem to know the difference between the two. Oh, God, thank you, Mumbling Ben. We needed that. Let's run back over to the stress line for a minute. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, it's Randy.
Hey, Randy, how are you?
Pretty good. I'd like to change the topic. Could I do that?
You can do it. You can do anything you want. It's a regular joint.
Okay. I'd like to talk to some of the truckers out there who are subject to mandatory drug testing.
Yes.
I just sent you an email.
I saw it.
This, I want to make sure I explain this, the mathematics behind it. But with mandatory drug testing, you get as many false positives as you get true positives. And let me explain. And typically, you only get one bite of the apple in our justice system. And here's how it works. If 95% of the populace is drug-free and the drug test is 95% accurate, the drug test is 5% inaccurate. So the false positives percentage is 95% times 5%.
Whoa.
You follow me so far?
I do. I do. With my limited mathematical skill set, I actually do.
Okay. And if the other 5% of the populace is using, but the drug test is 95% accurate, so the true positive percentage is 5% times 95%, so the percentage chance of true positives is the same in the population as the percentage chance of false positives.
So in other words, you get no meaningful data whatsoever.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but I'd say that you get out of a given population if, and these are just estimates, but out of a given population, you can see how you may pick up as many people who are using as you're picking up people who are not using.
Right, and there's using and then there's using. Because one of the problems that goes with mandatory drug testing is that, okay, now you could have enough acid running through your system to make it, you know, to make you see Jesus.
Right.
And it's never going to show up in any blood, breath, urine, hair, nothing test because it exists in such micro, just minuscule quantities.
Right.
Cocaine is out of the system in what, 3, 4, 5 days? Booze is out of the system in 24 hours.
All right.
Opiates out of the system in what, 5, 6, 7 days tops? But only poor little cannabis stays in the system for 28 days. And there's and if you smoke on day one and it shows up in your blood, breath, urine, it shows up in a drug test on day 28, it is not an indication that you are high on cannabis on day 28.
That's correct, but
it's enough to keep you out of the workforce.
I understand, but I'm concerned about the person who's totally drug free and who's getting nailed with this one bite of the apple for being a drug user.
Not, well, that's true. Now, and to be fair, though, inside, let's say, organized labor groups, you get more than one bite at the apple.
Okay, all right.
But if you don't have any kind of employment protection, you're just out the door.
Right. You know, I wonder if so many people are getting fired for all these minor offenses, can they really pull together a workforce anymore?
That's one of the problems.
Yeah.
While I understand the nature of what you're saying, Randy, the other side of it is that you've got a workforce that can't apply for work, or the other side of that is that you've got a workforce that, knowing what the deal is between the, because people who want to use substances are going to know, they're going to know the half-lives and how long it takes to get them out of their system. And so instead of something fairly benign like cannabis, maybe they'll opt for, you know, cocaine or acid.
Uh-huh.
Or pills.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's a whole lot of argument to be had over the relative dangers of those, or booze.
Well,
you know, I don't want a bus driver who's got a hangover from last night at the bowling alley.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm glad I get this out over the air, but the problem is that when I tried to explain this to a friend, every time I tried to explain it, he couldn't hear me.
Huh.
So, someone doesn't want this out there too much, you know.
Well, that's because drug testing is a humongous industry.
Right, yeah.
There's a lot of people making a lot of money out of it, Randy, but I think your points are well taken.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt the flow of discussion.
Oh, you didn't interrupt anything. That's what conversation radio is all about. There is no apology necessary, and you didn't need to make it.
All right, I'll see you around.
All right, take care, Randy. Bye now.
All right, bye.
A valid point, I think. The stuff, in other words, it don't work. The math doesn't support it. And the science doesn't support it. Now let's run over to the Skype line. Is that you, Todd?
Bob, yeah, it's me.
What's happening, man?
Listen, all your calls are great tonight. Gerald and Heather and the last person. Can't remember.
Oh, that was Randy.
His name. Randy, short-term memory. Anyway, yeah. On a sad day, you know, very sad day. Yeah, but you called, you know, Gerald just was on point with a lot of things. But, you know, really, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions because there's something I'm a little confused about, or maybe I need some clarification. But I seem to remember, if this is the Don Blankenship that I call Dick Dastardly, I don't know if you ever watched cartoons, but...
Yes, you know, yes, yeah.
Okay, without the hat.
Snidely, you know, Whiplash.
That's it. Sorry. Yes.
Score. Yes. I get a toaster.
Where's your cowbell? You cowbell yourself. So, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's it. You know what? You had me saying that for like 2 weeks. All right, Snidely. Yes. Right. Okay. Let me calm down. Yeah, that was the guy. He looks so... If people don't know, you got to look at the old Hanna-Barbera cartoon. I think it's called Penelope Pit Stop or something like that. I don't know.
That's the one.
That's the one.
And isn't it also, what's his name, of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police? I'll save you, Nell! That guy?
Yes. Dudley Do-Right.
That's the one.
So Don Blankenship. Now, all right, yeah. All right, you wanted some laughs. All right, that's the laugh, okay? But, I mean, unless my memory is faulty, well, I was kind of watching and paying attention to a lot of news, like I always do. But seemed like when he was on trial, it came out that he had, like, so many violations where it was like, why are you still in business? What the fuck? I mean, am I wrong?
No. And but again, those fines are kind of just there, and the regulating agencies all understand that. Well, they certainly are an annoyance, and they get in the way of good business, and so that's why Massey got to pay its fine in rocks in this state.
But see, you're saying fine, but I remember hearing what the fines were based on. These are serious infractions where this is like...
Yeah, they're like poisoning people.
Lives in jeopardy.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, it's not like minor shit. This is like, you need to shut this whole fucking place down. I mean, this place, basically they said the place was... I'm going to be real street. The place was fucking raggedy. It was raggedy. It was falling apart. And they had people working in there. It was falling the fuck apart. I mean, that's what I remember. I'm sorry, I have to get animated, but this is really...
No, and that's how it worked. So the way the scheme worked is the MSHA inspector would come along, and they'd get on the phone and say, okay, make like it's not raggedy in there, okay? The MSHA inspector's coming. Get the dust curtains up and throw some rock dust around and make it look like we give a damn, okay? Yeah, he'll be there in about 5 minutes. And yeah. That's the essence of the conspiracy that Don Blankenswine was involved in.
See, and you know, I'm not from West Virginia. I visited, and you know, I have an interest. This is just me. I've been to West Virginia. See what you were saying before. This is where we are now. See, they have just been eating up. In other words, that statement you said, it was a scheme from the beginning. Like, well, these people are expendable. They'll figure it out. They'll leave.
Well, and they are, because see, let's understand something, Todd. It is a lot cheaper to kill a coal miner, and then, you know, maybe you pay $1 million. Have you ever seen the giant goddamn dump trucks on a mountaintop removal site?
I have.
Okay, those giant-ass trucks.
Raggedy,
Those giant-ass trucks are a lot more expensive than one miserable miner's life.
Oh, hell yeah.
A friend of mine from years back had what, in regard to the coal industry, once described what he called the raindrop rule. And he said, a coal company cares more about a raindrop than they do a miner's life. Because there's always some dumb bastard who's willing to come in and work in that mine, no matter how many people have died in front of him. But if a raindrop falls on a piece of equipment, that raindrop might start a little bit of rust. And the rust will spread. And then you got to spend money on a new machine, and those machines are expensive. So we're going to spend our time worrying about the raindrops and not whether or not some poor sod gets blown from here to kingdom come inside the mine. Because you know what? If he gets blown from here to kingdom come, it's not going to affect the coal. All we got to do is scrape out the dead bodies, and then we can go in and get mining again. And that means money.
Well,
I mean, is there a flaw? I mean, you got a flaw in my reasoning anywhere?
No. What's your phrase? You get no pushback from me. And you know, and anybody who's younger, if they're listening, and you know, even people who don't like to read, you know, there's like docu movies like Harlan County. I think that was Kentucky though, and then. I mean, just basic history. We have moved. We're firmly in fascism now because, I mean, you look at what Pinkerton did in conjunction with protecting, like, River Rouge, you know, their plant, right? Basically, the courts are protecting corporate interest in doing whatever they want to do in terms of killing people. I mean, and we're talking about educated people. Supposedly, they've had history class. That's what I don't understand. Can you explain this to me?
In a place like West Virginia, Todd, the not teaching of history is deliberate. Because if you teach the history, well, then people might know the history, and if they know the history, they might think twice about what's going on. Instead, as Gerald and I were halfway joking about, instead we get rear window decals, spoiled life of a coal miner, or we get T-shirts down at the Rippy Mart that say, "About all I know is mining coal." Because we celebrate our ignorance. We're not ashamed of it. We're proud of it, by God.
Well, we can do better. We can do better. Collectively, we can do better. And I hope you have a great night.
I'm trying, Todd. I'm trying. You guys all make it ever so much better. You're the key to all of this. I just sit here and push the buttons and yap. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Take it easy, Todd. Good talking to you, my friend.
You too.
Be good. Later. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, and being reminded of South Carolina, I am reminded of a sad note. On behalf of all of us in the Horn Family Commune congregation, I want to send out our condolences and our sympathy to our buddy of long, long standing. He was listening back when we were on terrestrial radio and streaming from there. David in South Carolina. David's lovely spouse, Lynn, passed away this past Tuesday, December the 1st. And he and his family are necessarily distraught and grief-stricken. And I felt a profound sadness when I saw his announcement on Facebook. So I just wanted, because I know he listens to the program, I wanted David to know that our thoughts are with him and his family, and that that is sincere. And one of the worst parts of grief is that everybody experiences it in their own way. And the most any of us can hope to do is to try to identify with it and understand it. And merely say that we care. That we care. And we do, David. We certainly, certainly do. And if you want to share any information along the way, I'll be happy to share it out to the larger Horn community. But please know, David, that our thoughts are with you. The Angry Indian saying my condolences to his family. Thank you, Angry. So both lines are open. If you want to finish out the evening in conversation, you are more than welcome to. Area code 304-574-8178 is line one. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn. And the stress line is 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. Like I said, there's never much in the way of a paucity of stuff to work with in this program. I mentioned the petition about the fracking radioactive waste not too awfully far from me. Well, it turns out, via a website called Inside Climate News, let's just take it straight from the article by Neela Banerjee. An Environmental Protection Agency panel of independent scientific advisors has challenged core conclusions of a major study the agency issued in June that minimized the potential risks to drinking water from hydraulic fracking. The panel, which is known as the Science Advisory Board, particularly criticized the EPA's central finding that fracking has not led to widespread systemic impacts on drinking water resources in the United States. The 30 members of the Science Advisory Board said that and other conclusions in the executive summary were ambiguous or inconsistent, quote, with the observations data presented in the body of the report. Of particular concern is the statement of no widespread systemic impacts on drinking water resources. Neither the system of interest nor the definitions of widespread systemic or impact are clear, and it is not clear how this statement reflects the uncertainties and data limitations described in the report's chapters. So, in other words, the EPA's statement, you know, the EPA that's the same EPA that's leading a war on coal, and I have no doubt a war on fracking, even though the EPA is doing everything in its power to try to make sure that we frack our way to a poisonously prosperous future. The EPA was dummying up the science. Yeah, really. Mm-hmm. Because money. Right? And a little reminder, courtesy of Graham Redfern, that there's a circus taking place in Paris right now. The COP21 meetings, the climate change meetings, are not just going to include serious people trying to work on the problem. over at the Daily Good, Graham Redfern writes, as crucial as the UN climate negotiations are for combating climate change, they are equally complex and difficult to decipher. Out of the cacophony of commentary and claims that will be beamed out of the UN venue at Le Bourget, who in Paris should we ignore? Here's your guide. It starts with a political scientist, in other words, not a real scientist, named Bjorn Lomborg. And he's a Dane, and he runs a U.S. think tank called the Copenhagen Consensus Center. Well, isn't that cute? Among other things, he claims that emissions reductions pledges made by over 170 countries in the lead-up to Paris would only have a teeny tiny itsy-bitsy little impact on global warming. Now, as Graham Redfern points out, his research was basically picked apart into a million tiny pieces because he used bogus assumptions as his jumping-off place. But he'll be there. He'll be there to talk about how pointless it is for us to try to do anything about climate change. Another one of the clowns invading Paris is a creep by the name of Mark Morano. No, really. Thank you, Goddess of Irony. You get another rubber chicken sacrificed at midnight. Mark Morano. In which he, again, he is another one of these well-fed, well-funded recipients of wingnut welfare, heading the communications division at a place called the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. And he runs something called Climate Depot. And his job is to point out that climate change is a scam. As Graham Redfern points out in a documentary from 2014 called Merchants of Doubt, Mark Morano admits, I'm not a scientist, but I play one on TV. Is it any surprise to you to know that he is the former advisor to James Inhofe? Or how about Lord Monckton, who has argued that climate scientists be locked up and that that the entire climate science movement is a giant conspiracy that's been going on for 100 years. And no, you can't double down, Gerald, but among other things, Monckton has in the past described climate campaigners who are worried about their tomorrow as Hitler Youth. Mm-hmm. And real scumbag. Graham Redfern points out that big coal will be in Paris. The World Coal Association. Our future lies in clean coal tech. Wait a minute. Clean coal technology. Peabody Energy, who wants to blast the bejesus out of Mongolia and may be doing so even as we speak, they're going to be there. And they're going to argue that only coal can lift the world's poor out of energy poverty. Patrick Moore. How about Patrick Moore, a Canadian climate science denier? Yeah. Among other things, he went on French television last year to defend glyphosate. Isn't that Roundup? Yeah, the World Health Organization describes it as a probable carcinogen. And here's the fun part. This creature said, you can drink a whole quart of the probable carcinogen and it won't harm you. Here's the fun part. The interviewer offered Moore a glass of it to drink, and he said, I'm not an idiot. Just a warning. Just a warning. That meeting's going on, and there is a concerted conspiracy, the real kind, not the Alex Jones kind, that involves, what are they, some sort of elves or something? No, there's a real conspiracy at work in Paris to try to make sure that the human race doesn't have a chance. They're suicidal. They're speciesidal. You know what I mean? Let's run back over to the Skype line. Hey, Robert.
Hey.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right as we continue to live as the Chinese curse says in these interesting times.
Very interesting.
There's so many things to talk about, so little time to do it.
You got all the time you need.
Put this in your consolidation of power and wealth. I sent you an article a couple of days ago where the racy bunch is after our two radio stations up here. They're finally going to try to get their hands on WCLG, the AM and the FM. So I figure that's going to go through. I had the opportunity to attend town hall meeting Tuesday night over in Grafton on the forced pooling issue. You probably know more about that than I do.
No, you probably know as much or more. Tell people what forced pooling is, please, Robert.
Well, forced pooling is basically the taking of your property, or at least what's underground on your property, so they can go in and drill a deep gas well. And, you know, I went through about probably 2 hours the other night. I don't think the word fracking was ever uttered. You know, when you walk into one of these situations, you have to kind of look over the crowd and see who the cast of characters is. And, well, I know for one thing, Jay Taylor was there. He's this guy from over in Taylor County that's trying to do the convention of the states type thing and got our local.
Because that's such a great idea.
Oh, yeah, that's just a wonderful idea. Let's go in there and rewrite the United States Constitution. Sounds marvelous, since we're doing such a fine job with everything else these days. I mainly went over because I have the concerns, like a lot of people, about the safety issue when they start doing these wells left and right. If I could, can I read a short article to you that was out of Tuesday morning's Dominion Post?
Yeah, take a run at
this. This is Dateline Oklahoma City. At least seven earthquakes rattled north central Oklahoma on Monday, including one felt 300 miles away in Iowa, prompting concern from residents and policymakers that the state isn't doing enough to curb the quakes that scientists have linked to oil and gas activity. Oklahoma has become one of the most earthquake-prone areas in the world, with the number of quakes magnitude 3.0 skyrocketing from a few dozen in 2012 to more than, would you like to take a guess at the number?
It's a big sumbitch, isn't it?
Yes, it is. To more than 720 so far this year. And those are 720 3.0s or higher. Many of the earthquakes are occurring in swarms in areas where injection wells pump salty wastewater, a byproduct of oil and gas production, deep into the earth. Now, we had the privilege of having, I believe it was, it might have been delegate or representative. It was Mr. Ireland from Richard County the other night. And as he went into this, he started giving us facts and figures of how much cubic feet of gas they could pump out of these wells. And apparently, not only are they pretty much done with the Marcellus on top, which we start with, but they are planning to go down deeper into the Utica, and they are going down even deeper than the Utica into whatever the next layer is, where I believe he gave us a figure of about 60 million cubic feet a day.
You know, these rotten bastards are really going to get down to where the Balrogs live one of these days.
They just may drill down far enough to find the devil himself before it's over with. Yes, indeed. And as I sat there after a few minutes, I just started to absolutely feel filthy dirty. I felt like it was a meeting of the damn mafioso. You know, like they were sitting down discussing how they were going to divvy up the drug money they were getting. And, You know, it's just, I just felt so filthy dirty. All they're doing now is they're just, you know, it's a fait accompli that they are going to do something because they need the money and they want it. And there's going to be something put on the books this legislative session so they can start to get some money rolling in. So I left the place thoroughly disgusted, showed this article to some people over there to let them know what, you know, what kind of dangers we could be facing with this type of thing.
Well, I mean, but see, that's the thing, Robert. Where are the goddamn libertarians in this, please? You know, the that bunch that says that America exists solely to preserve people's sacred property rights? I mean, have I got that right? And they're just going to sit there and not utter a damn peep over this forced pooling issue?
Well, it did run onto a farmer from over in Taylor County who was there, and there were, you know, two or three people there that were opposed to it. But the problem there is when you, this pooling, at least one thing about it is it has to be 80%. They have to have 80% of the acres before they can drag the other 20 along. I'm very surprised they even kept it that high. I was figuring.
Oh, it won't make it out of committee that way come legislature time.
You're probably right, and even if it does, after a couple years, don't you figure that number, once the money starts flowing, they'll just buy themselves.
Look, the last legislative session, when this came up, that was a rehearsal. Same with the same thing with the right to work, and the same thing with prevailing wage. It was just a dress rehearsal. It was a temperature taking. It was water, well, not water testing. We don't do that.
Well,
but you get the idea. This time they're in earnest.
Oh yeah, they definitely are. The delegates there the other night said something like a preliminary vote that was like 60-40, but then some of them switched at the last minute, and it ended up, I believe it was in the last minutes of the last day, in something like a 49 all tie. It just couldn't quite make it out of there. So you know, they're going to get it out one way or another this time. That's for damn sure.
It's not going to be fun. And by the way, just for historical perspective, I was the overnight rock and roll DJ at WCLG FM, followed by being the morning news guy.
Oh, were you indeed?
At CLG AM, yes.
I had listened to CLG off and on since, I think, 1979. Don't know what year were you there?
I was there in the late 80s and early 90s.
They're classic rock and roll on the AM side, and I believe they're just plain old rock and roll on the FM.
We were kind of classic slash contemporary rock and roll on the FM side at that point in time. And
mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know, I think we were across, they were a cross between, we, yeah, because they got an ownership interest. They were like a cross between Dropkick Me Jesus, Through the Goalpost, The Life, and Country on the AM.
Oh. And I wanted to call you about this yesterday, but of course, at the last minute yesterday, things changed quite a bit, and I just didn't feel it was appropriate that you needed to talk about, about the actions, the events of yesterday. I'm quite sorrowful about all those people that lost their lives, and the fact that we will still not be looking to do any kind of gun control legislation or anything. It will just continue, I suppose, merrily on its way. I caught the first few moments of Brian Fisher this afternoon. I always like to kind of get him for like the first 5 minutes to see if he's going to say something extremely stupid. And today he did.
God,
not.
Is that even a gamble?
Well, sometimes he can hold himself off for a few minutes, long enough to say a prayer, you know. But today I sent you, I believe, the link to the clip. About a minute and 50 seconds in, he is saying that the problem, of course, is not radical Islam, it's just Islam. So we'd have another person there rooting to start the religious war, and I don't think we can avoid it anymore. I'm afraid we're just, maybe that's what our jobs of the future will be. We'll have so many soldiers and policemen, that's all we'll have jobs for.
Yeah, just fighting the Crusades. I mean, it worked for East Germany, didn't it? Wasn't one half of East Germany ratting out the other half of East Germany? Wasn't that how it worked? By the way, our buddy Ron in the recently frozen north, only recently, is far better at the Gazettas and the Cypher than I am. Those earthquake numbers you mentioned?
Yeah.
Yeah. In Oklahoma, the percentage of 3.5 magnitude on the Richter scale earthquakes is up by around 5,000%.
Oh, my gosh. That's 50 times what you used to have. Okay. Well, what happens in West Virginia if that happens? Instead of being a level place, a place where you have hill and valley, as I told some people, I said, that starts to happen around here, and your backyard this evening may be your front yard tomorrow morning.
Look, I have argued in the past that one of these days, the entire, and I say this with no glee, Robert, but this is a truism for most of coal-bearing central Appalachia. One of these days, just by simple natural forces, not something fun and exciting like an earthquake, but merely by plain forces of subsidence and collapse, the entire city of Beckley is just going to go and fall into a hole in the ground.
Because there's so many mines in and around and underneath.
Sure, and then...
Yeah, the mine subsidence. It's like I told my aunt, if they go there and they start taking coal or pumping gas out, what goes in where that was?
Well, sure, and beyond that, that's one of the neat things about being a hillbilly, is that we get to learn some really nifty big words, like hydrologic pressure. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
For instance, you mentioned earthquakes. I think about the fact that they've used plenty of high explosives around the Brushy Fork impoundment down in western Raleigh County, which is the largest dam in the Western Hemisphere, and holds back, it's rated for 9.8 billion gallons of open toxic waste.
Oh, we got quite a few dams when you look at what Summersville and Sutton and Tiger Lake.
No, yeah, but I mean, those are presumably engineered with a little bit of give a damn. The ones in coal country aren't. Those are just there to hold back the sludge.
You're talking more of an earthen dam, right?
Well, it's dirt and rock.
Yeah. Basically a pond, sort of.
Only a pond that's 9.8 billion gallons of toxic waste.
And if it springs a leak.
Well, and here's the fun part. Time after time, we've identified these dams leaking at the toe, okay? Which is a terrible place for dams to leak, by the way. If you're going to have a dam leaking at the toe is never good. That means that it could open kind of like a goddamn garage door. With terrible results, but here's where it gets even more interesting. Those dams in the presence of an earthquake, well, they would the earth would literally become gelatinous, and then. But here's what's even more interesting: where they built that dam, that particular dam, the Brushy Fork, Robert. Everything under the dam is old coal mine. And that old coal mine is full of old coal mine water. Because water is just a natural part of the coal mining process in a place that's a temperate rainforest like Appalachia.
And probably a lot of sulfur and other heavy metals.
But water. And so that means the water is pressing upward against the liquids pressing downward from the sludge sea, and it's also pressing outward. I mean, it seems like it's almost a constant now. Driving down Route 60 from here to Charleston, what you'll find is that there's always a state road crew working to shore up, because that entire mountain is actually the oldest mountaintop removal complex in the state. Some of it goes back to 1972. And that mountain is coming apart, and water will always seek its level, and the Kanawha River is just over on the other side of the road, and the water in the mountain is desperately trying to get into the Kanawha River.
Well, what you've got me thinking of there, you've got a situation sort of like a aerosol can. You've got it in there and pressurized and ready to go. All you need is somebody to poke a hole in it. And whoom.
And guess what? The coal companies are more than happy to poke those holes.
Well, I was glad to see Mr. Blankenship found guilty today, but I'm very sad that he doesn't get any punishment. Nothing on par with the people that suffered the consequences of his actions.
Well, the thing is, though, it has to survive the appellate process. And that means in other words, for the government's case to stand, bear with me here. Let's use a sporting analogy. If two teams play each other, and one team wins the first game, well, it's kind of likely that at some point in a three game, you know, a 2-1 split, a 1-2 split, very seldom do you get a 3-0 or 0-3. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for this conviction to stand, Robert, the government has got to, the government, we the people trying to form that more perfect union, yada, yada, yada. We have to go 3-0. We have to win at the Fourth Circuit appellate level, and then we have to win at the Supreme Court level. And I just don't, I don't see that happening.
Oh, doubtful.
And so we're not going to stick him in the hoosegow like you would some ordinary common criminal. He's a special criminal, so he's going to stay out of the clink until he's exhausted his appeals. And hell, by then he may be living in New Zealand,
or he may be dead. He's an old man, isn't he?
Nah, he's not that old. He's just barely. He's 65.
Okay, well, 70. Of course, people like that usually tend to be very long-lived.
Sure, because he's got all the advantages.
But one thing we know is he's not going to be like Oscar Pistorius. They're not going to come back and hit him with something.
Well, no, because we've got a double jeopardy rule.
Yeah. In case people don't know, Pistorius was found guilty of murder yesterday.
Right, because they got a second bite of the apple.
Mm-hmm.
To go back to Randy's terminology, exactly.
No, the odds are, he'll probably never do a day in any jail of any sorts.
I would say most of West Virginia shares your estimation. Absolutely.
But I wish it would end in this state, this attitude of anything for money. It's a dangerous attitude.
That's the thing. It will end. It will end because we're not going to have anything that we can do anything for money over. Sooner or later. You and I may not live to see it, but
because the resources are finite. They're going to go away sooner or later.
But the thing is, there's not going to be anybody to punish over it either. And that is a crying damn shame. Because someone should bear some responsibility for what... But again, I don't want to limit this. I don't want to make this about West Virginia. It's the same thing the world over. Well, the same thing the nation over, at least. The system that let Don Blankenship get away with a slap on the wrist, the fact that he couldn't even be charged directly in the deaths of 29 incinerated human beings. I mean, they were... look, let's deal with it. They were cremated alive, Robert.
Well, sure.
Okay. And the fact that we have a system that doesn't even permit for direct punishment of direct involvement in that, holy Jesus, what does it say about us? And I'm not entirely for sure, but Robert, I do know this much: what it says about us is that you and I have got to hang up because we're out of time.
Yep. Well, it's just been another day. As I start now to refer to this. Welcome to District 12.
Here we are.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are indeed.
You have a good night. Take care.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Robert calling from not too awfully far from Morgantown or thereabouts. So there we find ourselves at the conclusion of this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Yay! And I want to thank Greg. We have a brand new subscriber in Greg, and Greg is the lone voice supporting the continued existence of the horn in this particular evening. So thank you very kindly, Greg. Thank you very kindly indeed. We will start tomorrow evening with a fundraising goal in the neighborhood of $380, unless something happens overnight. Thank you, Greg. Thank you very much. And thank you one and all for sharing your time in this conversation this evening. I appreciate it. I hope you all get something out of it. I'm told from time to time via email that you do, and it makes my day when I hear that kind of thing or read that kind of thing. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. You know, they've been battling Don Blankenship a hell of a lot longer than the U.S. attorney has. And it takes guts to do it. So thank you. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.